I mean, uncertainty scares everybody, especially in a situation like this after, you know, 20 years of war.
Inside Taliban Talks. It's Friday, October 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, receding reefs weaken the Great Barrier. Mammoth U.S. political battles. One key state to reach the White House. Climbing COVID cases. Health monitoring close. It's all on today's VOA Asia. NATO's senior civilian representative to Afghanistan, Stefano Pontecorvo, says while both the Taliban and the Afghanistan Republic negotiation teams in Doha have entered the talks in good faith, the rigidity of the Taliban team is holding up progress. He sat down with VOA's Aisha Tanzim in Kabul to discuss what he said were unacceptably high levels of violence, the future of NATO's commitment to Afghanistan, and what the country might look like in 10 years. Here's part two of our interview.
If the U.S. forces withdraw before their 14-month timeline that they agreed to in February, how would NATO respond?
Well, I would refer back to the Secretary General's comments on this issue. Secretary General reminded all of us that there are alliance decisions for which we have come in together. We will adjust together, and we are adjusting together in support of the peace process, and we will go out together. And on the operational front, nothing much is happening.
This time, I have seen many Afghans more scared than I've seen them in the past many years, and they think that the history of the 90s will be repeated. Do you think their fears are valid?
No, I don't, because first in the 90s, there wasn't an ANDSF. Now there is. There is a strong, professional, motivated, and capable fighting force which is able to stand its ground. Second, the Afghan society is not the same. So I believe that the Afghan society will not take an attempt to a return to the past lying down. So I believe that uncertainty scares everybody, especially in a situation like this after, you know, 20 years of war. But I'm fairly confident that it will not be repeated.
You're right that there's an NDSF. You're also right that the Afghan society has changed, but the Afghan economy is not doing very well. They collected half the taxes that they were supposed to collect. They require something of, I don't know, $10 billion in foreign assistance just to make their budget. How long in this COVID-driven world economy, when every country is struggling with money, how long will they be able to pump those billions into Afghanistan?
Well, we hope, first of all, it is true that the Afghan economy is not doing as well as it could, even taking account of the situation, which is what it is. I mean, it's 20 years war, which doesn't help any economy. The government knows it has to do more. The president has said that in various occasions. The first occasion in which to show that things are evidently changing is the upcoming Geneva conference on donor conference. More has to be done. As concerns, NDSF, we will continue to fund it and to assist it up till at least 2024. And I would take the occasion to say that, as you said, Afghanistan needs external help for hopefully a decreasing number of years. This is a message also to the Taliban. The donors will look at what comes out of Geneva, out of the IAN, starting from Geneva, although by November I don't think much will happen. But the donors will look at what government will come up, and if they like what they see, they will continue to donate. So if the Taliban believe that they can bring this country back to where they think they would like to bring it back, I think they have to think again.
So sitting where you're sitting, knowing all that you know, all the information that you have, what does Afghanistan look like in 10 years?
Inshallah, it's a stable, peaceful, prosperous, and advanced Islamic country. Integrating all the ethnicities, integrating the current Taliban fighters, having gotten rid of the other extremist forces, at peace with itself and with the region, to which we can be a great contributor. Afghanistan is a link with everything around here. So it is in the interest of countries in the region to have a stable Afghanistan. And I hope that, I think that, we have to give Afghans the possibility to show what they're made of. And I remember this country. I was here as a child. It was a pearl. And that is what I hope it will become.
NATO's senior civilian representative to Afghanistan, Stefano Pontecorvo. Hear and see the entire interview at our website. That's voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China angered as U.S. names human rights envoy for Tibet. U.S. destroyer sails through Taiwan Strait, provoking China. Ardern tipped to win second term in New Zealand election. Kyrgyzstan president resigns after unrest. Australia police drop journalist probe over Afghan troop story. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more can be found online at Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. A flotilla of tourist boats, fishing vessels, and yachts is conducting a pioneering survey of Australia's Great Barrier Reef. Conservationists have recruited more than 30 boats to help examine up to 150 ecologically significant reefs over the next 10 weeks. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Great Barrier Reef is so vast that as much as 40% of this underwater paradise has never been surveyed. A fleet of private boats has begun inspecting critical parts of Australia's greatest natural treasure to help establish the impact of climate change, pollution, and other threats. The project, coordinated by citizens of the Great Barrier Reef, aims to capture large-scale reconnaissance data. Andy Ridley is the organisation's chief executive.
The Great Reef Census involves a whole load of organisations who work on the reef, from tourism operators to super yacht owners to research stations, universities. There's four universities involved, including University of Queensland and James Cook University. And we've had some amazing support from funders such as the Great Barrier Reef Foundation. But it's a really massive collective community effort.
Snorkelers and recreational divers will take photographs at specified sites on the reef every 10 metres. The images will be available online for analysis by so-called citizen scientists around the world. Peter Mumby, a professor at the University of Queensland School of Biological Sciences, says the data will be invaluable.
What we're hoping to achieve with the help of the public is to find those reefs that are most important at driving the recovery of the barrier reef to the series of bleaching events that it has experienced in recent years.
Large areas of the Great Barrier Reef have been degraded in recent years by severe bleaching or loss of the algae that corals host that give them their vibrant colour and much of their energy. It's caused by warmer ocean temperatures, and scientists say it's made worse by climate change. The reef stretches for 2,300 kilometres off northeastern Australia. It's about the size of Japan and is the world's largest coral system. The World Heritage listed area is home to an array of marine creatures, including 600 types of coral and more than 100 species of jellyfish. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand's prime minister has declared a state of emergency in response to massive protests demanding his resignation and reforms of the country's constitutional monarchy. Authorities warned protesters not to go ahead with a planned demonstration in the Thai capital Thursday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's Friday. We're glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. This week, the U.S. Senate is holding confirmation hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett to fill the Supreme Court seat left empty by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who passed away last month. Supreme Court justices receive lifetime positions that hold great power, and the battle to fill the seat has become a focus of the contest between President Donald Trump and his challenger Joe Biden. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara reports.
Protesters and supporters of Amy Coney Barrett square off outside of the Supreme Court as the conservative judge faces tough questions from Senate Democrats, including whether she will recuse herself from cases that could impact the outcome of the November election.
I will apply the factors that other justices have before me in determining whether the circumstances require my recusal or not. But I can't offer a legal conclusion right now about the outcome of the decision I would reach.
Appointment of conservative judges is a key campaign promise for President Donald Trump, who often frames it in ideological terms.
If Joe Biden and the Democrats take power, they will pack the Supreme Court with far-left radicals who will unilaterally transform American society far beyond recognition.
Currently behind in opinion polls, Trump frequently claims the only way he will lose against Democratic nominee Joe Biden is if the election is rigged. With dozens of election-related lawsuits already filed, close results in swing states could mean a scenario like the 2000 race between George W. Bush and Al Gore, where the result was decided by a Supreme Court vote. Statements by Trump and some Republicans suggesting that Barrett must be confirmed to ensure the court rules in their favor in post-election litigation creates the appearance of impropriety, said constitutional expert Adam White.
They have really created a cloud that I think she is going to have to dispel through her own work on the court to make very clear that when she's appointed to the court, that she doesn't answer to President Trump. She doesn't answer to anybody but the law.
If Barrett is confirmed, there will be six justices appointed by Republican presidents and three appointed by Democrats. If Biden wins, some Democrats want him to appoint more Supreme Court justices, arguing that it would help ideologically balance the court. Republicans strongly oppose that. The number of justices is not set in the Constitution, but there have been nine since 1869.
If you add more and more seats, you're going to have small coalitions that have to engage in sort of compromise and I won't say bartering, but it'll look less and less like a principled body of decisions and more like a set of legislative compromises.
Biden says he's not a fan of court packing, but has largely avoided the issue, focusing instead on Democrats' concern that the court could overturn a signature Obama-era legislation that expands Americans' access to health care.
This nominee said she wants to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. The president wants to get rid of the Affordable Care Act.
Barrett insisted that if confirmed, she has no agenda on Obamacare or other politically divisive issues, including abortion rights and same-sex marriage. Patsy Whitaker-Kuswara, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia, at least 30 people have been killed because of sudden torrential rains and flooding in southern India. Dramatic images showed cars being washed away by swirling waters, bridges submerged by swollen rivers, and trucks stranded on roads inundated by flooding. You'll find these and all the other stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. President Donald Trump and his Democratic challenger Joe Biden have campaigned hard in the U.S. southeastern state of Florida, which has 29 of the 270 electoral votes either candidate would need to win the election. America's biggest swing state and haven for retirees, Florida has chosen the winner of the last six presidential contests. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti reports from Miami on what it will take for Trump or Biden to carry the state.
Joni Stein's neighbor Ricky made her another Joe Biden campaign sign when hers was stolen from her yard.
Get off my lawn. We're not voting for that man.
Stein can't even bring herself to say Donald Trump's name.
I had the same values as Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Opposite values of the other person who's running again.
At age 71, Stein is among Florida's 4 million senior citizens who have a big say in how the state votes. So is Graciela Law, an Argentinian immigrant who just cast her early ballot for President Trump.
We need someone that is not only concerned about every American citizen, we need someone that knows how to be a president, that knows how to be a leader. You cannot protect the inside of your house if you have your door open and anybody can walk in.
Law was referring to Trump's tough immigration policies that are popular with his base. Florida voters are key to presidential elections. Not since Bill Clinton in 1992 has a presidential contender won the White House without winning Florida.
Thank you.
In the past five elections, only a few percentage points separated the top two candidates. And in every case, the winner of Florida went on to become the president of the United States.
El agua, la luz.
Political ads in English and Spanish flood the airwaves in Florida, where one in four people is of Hispanic descent.
I'm going to be good to go down as almost progressive.
Trump has repeatedly accused Biden of harboring a socialist agenda for America, a charge rejected by Alberto Sanchez, who is originally from Puerto Rico.
It's ironic that the local propaganda that they're doing is to make it to try to get the Venezuelan-Cuban vote is to make Biden seem like he would be a socialist that would drive you to communists as these leaders, when it's totally the opposite. There couldn't be a more centrist candidate.
But questions about socialist leanings resonate loudly in Florida, according to Javier Pollitt of the Hispanic Advisory Council. He's all in for Trump.
The Hispanics, a capitalistic system is very, very important. We immigrated here, many of us, and we've worked hard and our forefathers before us with our parents worked very, very hard to give us the things that we all have had today and the liberties that we have today in Florida.
Arthur Simon is a political science professor at the University of Miami who served six terms in the House of Representatives.
The Puerto Rican vote tends to tilt towards Democrats, whereas the Cuban American vote in Florida tended to tilt towards Republicans. So and it could balance, these two groups could balance themselves out.
Professor Simon says voter turnout will likely decide the contest. More than a million Floridians have already cast an early ballot. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Miami, Florida.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, the number of confirmed COVID-19 infections worldwide has accelerated in recent days, with more than 38 million cases and a death toll exceeding 1 million as of Wednesday. The United States remains the worst-hit country in the world, followed by India and Brazil. We get more from VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo.
The World Health Organization says many countries are reporting an increase in coronavirus hospitalizations. At the same time, the WHO says it's been an uneven pandemic because of how countries have responded and how they've been affected.
Almost 70% of all cases reported globally last week were from 10 countries, and almost half of all cases were from just three countries.
The WHO Director General also said while there has been some discussion about the concept of herd immunity by letting the virus spread, he is not in favor of it.
Herd immunity is a concept used for vaccination, in which a population can be protected from a certain virus if a threshold of vaccination is reached. For example, herd immunity against measles requires about 95% of a population to be vaccinated. For polio, the threshold is about 80%. In other words, herd immunity is achieved by protecting people from a virus, not by exposing them to it.
Meanwhile, in the U.S., the country with the most coronavirus cases, election campaigning is in full swing weeks before the November 3rd contest. President Trump is back on the campaign trail after contracting the virus about 2 weeks ago. His Democratic challenger, Joe Biden, continues to criticize Trump's handling of the pandemic.
Folks, Donald Trump's chaotic and divisive leadership has cost us far too much. 215,000 dead from COVID-19 and rising.
Trump insists better days lie ahead.
Right now I'm fighting to eradicate the virus, rebuild the economy, and save our country from the radical left.
This week, Johnson & Johnson said it was pausing clinical trials of a COVID-19 vaccine due to an unexplained illness in a study participant. Drug maker Eli Lilly said it was also halting its coronavirus antibody trial because of safety concerns. Meanwhile, hopes for passing a new coronavirus relief package faded as U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi rejected the White House's $1.8 trillion proposal. Delays are prompting anxiety in financial markets, according to analysts.
I think investors are frustrated that Washington can't seem to get its act together to give a package to the country, which is sorely needed, especially for small business, before the election.
In Europe, France has recently seen record numbers of confirmed COVID-19 cases, prompting President Emmanuel Macron to impose a nighttime curfew for Paris and several other cities. In Spain, where the number of cases is higher than anywhere else in Western Europe, emotional fatigue has set in among some of the intensive care staff. In Britain, London's mayor warns of tougher coronavirus restrictions as cases rise.
I'm afraid the bad news is that all the indicators we have, the number of new cases, the positivity rate, admissions to hospitals, admissions in ICUs, cases of older people, all the indicators we have are that things are going in the wrong direction.
Restrictions include a 6-person limit on social gatherings and a 10 p.m. curfew in pubs, clubs, and restaurants. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Researchers in the field of textile computing are developing clothing that can monitor health vitals such as heart rate and respiration. As social distancing efforts continue and the use of telemedicine grows, the implications for remote health care are significant. Tina Trin explores.
These days, checking in with a doctor may mean going online, but in the future, it could simply mean getting dressed. Textile computing researchers are developing washable sensors that can measure your vital signs through your clothes.
Our yarn is actually the sensor, and then we knit or weave that sensor in a specific formation.
Tony Shaheen is the CEO of Canadian startup Myint, which is currently testing a line of connected undergarments.
We're taking a electric signal from the body through a conductive thread or a conductive yarn.
He likens it to getting an electrocardiogram at the hospital.
The wire is getting the electric signal off the heart. Essentially, we're doing the same thing except on yarn.
Over at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, a prototype shirt has flexible, washable sensors discreetly woven into channels of the fabric.
And we digitally knit it based on your body so that it can have a conformable structure along with our conformable electronics.
Customized garments could potentially be fitted to any body type, even newborns. Both MIT and Myint garments gather physiological data such as heart rate, temperature, respiration, and movement.
This device sort of create a map of your body throughout the week or throughout the month or throughout the seasons.
It's a more comprehensive picture of patient health that can inform both doctors and family members via detachable Bluetooth modules that wirelessly transmit the data. Dr. Milos Popovic is testing Myint's undergarments and says the technology is especially beneficial for the aging population.
We see this as a solution to bring care to the patients in their homes and enable people to be treated from homes without them needing to come to the hospital. And that reduces the burden on the hospital so we can treat more patients.
A glimpse of the future of healthcare in the age of social distancing. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
That's our program for today and for the week. We thank you so much for joining us on VOA Asia. Don't forget, you may continue online with us on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd also like to thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.